The Army Corps of Engineers has granted the permit needed to complete the Dakota Access Pipeline. Opponents are gearing up to resist, to protest, to challenge that order. And meanwhile, supporters are cheering the go-ahead, saying this pipeline is safe and necessary. And we will welcome your questions and your reactions for both of our guests who represent two different sides of this issue. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. So what is your reaction to this go-ahead for the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Do you generally support or oppose this project? We welcome your thoughts and questions. Let me welcome our first guest who supports the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline. William Yeatman is the Assistant Director in the Center for Energy and Environment. He released a statement in response in favor of the latest developments of the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline. He is with the Center for Energy and Environment at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for being with us. So let's get your reaction to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers granting this this permit.
Well, this is a big win for the rule of law and regulatory certainty. It might surprise your listeners to know that the action that was taken by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in the Trump administration was actually defended in court about 6 months ago by the Obama administration. That is to say, the go-ahead with the project is the culmination of this two-year permitting process, which the applicant, the Dakota Access Partners, the company behind constructing the line, they went through all the correct procedural steps. They followed all the correct statutes. They did all the appropriate outreach. And as a result, they were granted a permit in July of 2016. And the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, they defended that permit in court along with the company. And that was over the course of July, August, and September. And then on September 18th, the court actually sided. It was an initial determination on a temporary restraining order. In essence, a federal court in D.C. sided with the government, sided with the Obama administration and the pipeline company, and refused to stop the project. Said that at first glance, again, it was initial determination for a temporary restraining order. But they, in essence, said, look, it looks as though the company has performed all its legal obligations. And again, this was something that the Obama administration, Department of Justice, actually argued for. Now, 5 minutes after the judge in September, the federal judge, basically gave the project a green light, the Obama administration issued a press release in which it said, well, on second thought, even though we defended this two-year process that the company went through, we've changed our minds. So thank you very much for the federal court for your input, but we're going to go ahead and put a stop on this project. And it is easy. You don't have to be cynical to think that this was an elevation of politics over the rule of law. As your listeners are perhaps no doubt aware, this became this issue, the federal government's involvement, the granting of this permit. I might add here that the pipeline is 99% on private land. It's actually great. It's 99.3%, I believe. So the only input for the federal government was at these river crossings. The one in particular that was of particular controversy was a half mile north on private land of of the reservation of the Standing Rock Sioux. So it became a political football. Protesters showed up out the wazoo. There was a heavy environmentalist element. I mean, they're less concerned with the plight of Native Americans historically in the United States and more concerned with sort of an anti-fossil fuel agenda. It was the same thing they did with Keystone Pipeline. And during Obama's lame duck, Again, right after, I'm sorry, this is September 18th, so I do apologize. This is not yet during his lame duck. But it was the president effectively, after the court of law had weighed in, reversed that decision. And then subsequently, yes, during his lame duck, he, in essence, stopped the project wholesale. So it was that was a somewhat long-winded and circuitous way of saying the decision to permit the pipeline is again, a
long overdue. But you
well,
know,
indeed.
Yeah, and for from your perspective, and let me ask you though. So, whether politics played a part in it or not, the Obama administration did put a stop to it and ordered the Army Corps of Engineers to study it further to see maybe if a reroute was needed or to look at it again. And it the decision was made so quickly. The opponents of the pipeline are saying, "Hey, that that review could not have happened that quickly."
Oh, indeed. Well, it was actually, so to be precise, the president effectively ordered the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to undertake a multi-year review process.
Right.
It's an environmental impact statement. And yes, it was, it is no, again, you don't have to be a cynic to recognize that for capital-intensive endeavors like infrastructure projects such as this pipeline, if you were delayed for 2 years, and again, I should note here that the pipeline is 90% built. I mean, it is just waiting to be built across this the 0.7% of its route that is subject to federal jurisdiction. So when there are delays for these capital-intensive projects that require financing, time is money. So it was the environmentalist strategy is to delay the project until the company behind it, they don't have any more money to continue. I mean, and that's simply how it works. If you delay it for 2 years, according to the company, it lost $20 million every month. You know, and again, that's due to the you've got to finance these things. So again, time is money. But
well, so the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, though, led may have been joined by environmental groups as well, but they led the opposition, fearing a leak could pollute the water that their drinking water. They said that sacred land for the Sioux, and did not want this pipeline to go under this this reservoir on the Missouri River. So, what do you say though to the concerns of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe?
Of course, I respect their concerns. I mean, this is a they are more than free to articulate those concerns. My issues with the way that the Standing Rock Sioux went about this is that the whole point of the statute at question, so the laws that everyone is fighting over, this National Environmental Protection Act and a Policy Act and also the Historical Preservation Act, the whole point of these laws is to engender cooperation, consultation between the federal government and the private entity that is seeking the action and any interested party. So, to this end, for 2 years, the Standing Rock Sioux rebuffed overtures from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and from the Dakota Access Pipelines to cooperate pursuant to these statutes. Now, Standing Rock Sioux, they were alone here for whatever reason, and I'm not sure why it was only at the tail end of the process that they got interested, but both the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the Dakota Access Pipeline, the project developers, they worked with scores of tribes in the region, and pursuant to that consultation, they surveyed twice as many miles. So it goes through 350 miles in North Dakota. They surveyed 700 miles. Pursuant to this consultation, they bought 400 feet on either side of like the pipeline path they bought in order to perform extensive excavations and archaeological research. Pursuant to this consultation, they modified the route 140 times in order to respect sites of religious significance to Native Americans. So again, for 2 years, they played it by the book, and they consulted and they cooperated with all these Native American tribes, and as a result of the cooperation, their project changed considerably. Again, 140 times the route changed. It was only at the tail end of this 2-year process that the Standing Rock Sioux jumped in. And again, here they were represented by Earth Justice. So it is a little bit strange that an environmental litigation group is representing Native Americans for a statute, the National Historic or the Preservation Act, this Antiquities Act that pertains solely to Native American issues. It is weird that they're being represented by environmentalists. But at the last second of this two-year process, they swoop in and they say, whoa, we want you to review, even though the federal government only has jurisdiction over 0.7% of this pipeline, we want you to review the whole thing. We want you to take a couple years to do so. And, you know, again, I'm sympathetic. This is completely aside from the way that Native Americans have been treated in this country historically. I mean, that is a separate issue, and I'm very sympathetic to that. But on this particular issue, I would be a lot more sympathetic to the Standing Rock Sioux's role were it not a matter of record before a federal court that they simply did not play ball, that they sat in the sidelines for 2 years while all these other tribes, you know, went through the consultation process and benefited from it. Again, the pipeline was rerouted 140 times. So I aside from the you know, what are terrible historical relationships between the U.S. government and Native Americans, on this particular issue, is, you know, we're talking about a crossing on private land a half mile north of their reservation. They had the opportunity to cooperate. They didn't. Then they swooped in and effectively asked to pause the project for a number of years, suspiciously being represented by an environmental litigation group that is on the record as opposing all fossil fuel projects across the board. So it was, you know, again, it's setting aside for a moment the injustices that have been suffered by the Standing Rock Sioux historically. I don't think this is one of them, and the reason I don't think that's the case is because they didn't play ball. And then they, you know, at the tail end of the process, they said, well, what about us? You know, pause it for 2 years. And, you know, that's I would have a lot more sympathy for their position had they, at the outset, responded to the outreach from the repeated outreach from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and from the company to cooperate and consult. So that is, I mean.
We will take a short pause, and then we have many callers who have thoughts or questions or views on the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers this week announcing it will grant the permit needed to complete the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline. Our guest right now is William Yeatman. He is a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, recently released a statement in favor of this development of the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline. We will, a little bit later in the hour, be welcoming in a guest who opposes it. And we welcome your questions and thoughts at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with a guest who supports the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline, which was granted final approval this week from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. What do you think? Do you approve of this pipeline or not? Why or why not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We have a full line, so let's go to Betsy in Madison. Hi, Betsy.
Hi, good morning, Joy. Listen, I find it really disturbing that your guest is telling us alternative facts, as Kellyanne Conway likes to say. This is not true at all. This is not even the remote.
What's not true, Betsy?
The Native American, the indigenous people, have been playing ball probably since the beginning of all of this. They were not informed. They were told that this is what's going to happen. They are protecting our water, and we need to find alternative energy sources. This is a travesty against our indigenous people, and he's not telling the truth.
Right, so they were told this was going to happen. There really wasn't some sort of consultation going on here, William Yeatman, according to Betsy, and that, You know, I'll add to that. Even if the tribe didn't want to talk about the possibility of this pipeline because they opposed it, should that mean that it is coming late to the party? Too bad for you.
Oh, first off, Betsy, thank you for your call. I do respectfully disagree with the timeline and the fact pattern, and I do respectfully suggest please check out the Earth Justice. You can look it up online, but they've got all the court documents. They've got links to them. And please just read the federal court decision from September 18th. I'll just recite a couple facts from that get to the point, the court's conclusion that indeed the Standing Rock Sioux did not play ball. On September 30th, 2014, for example, the Corps sent centerline files of the planned pipeline route to Standing Rock Sioux for review. There was no response. On October 2nd, 2014, the Standing Rock Sioux backed out of the first scheduled meeting with the Corps on the project. The Corps rescheduled the above meeting for November 6, 2014. Again, tribe officials were a no-show. On December 19th, 2014, the Corps again reached out to the Standing Rock Sioux to schedule a meeting. Again, there was no response. This is in addition to three state, North Dakota, their Public Service Commission put on state hearings, expressly invited the Standing Rock Sioux to attend, and they declined each time.
Yeah, maybe they thought if they didn't show, I mean, I don't know what happened here, but we oppose this, we're not having anything to do with this, and so therefore they should have it?
Well, I mean, I would just respectfully disagree that the whole point of the consultation process is to incorporate that sort of input. And indeed, there are legal means. If there are, in fact, these historical artifacts, then it will be rerouted. The pipeline will take that into consideration. I'm sorry, the project developers. So I just don't. It's you're putting the project developers who raised $3.7 billion to finance this shovel-ready project, you're putting them in a tough position when, after they build 90% of it, and it's on 99.3% private land, that a half a mile north of a Native American reservation, that the Native Americans can, in essence, hold the entire process hostage by refusing to comply with the law comply with the spirit of the law. I mean, they're not required to cooperate, but the company behind the project and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is required to reach out. They rebuffed that. Can they control everything? I mean, is there anything not under their purview? Or can they show up in Washington, D.C. and demand legislation on electric vehicles? I mean, I know that sounds like a non sequitur, but it's tough to justify. I mean, or at least in my mind, and I do appreciate that different people can disagree, but it's the whole point of the process is to get those concerns on the table. And if you don't play by the process, and then you swoop in the last second, and you use the laws that set that process to try to slow it down, and again, you're represented by an environmental litigation group that opposes all fossil fuels, that seems a little bit cynical. Actually, that seems a lot cynical to me.
Is it true that that this pipeline was at first going to be going through the Bismarck area, but because of public protest and outcry, it was rerouted to include where it is now?
No. That's not true. That was one of the many, as I noted, as a result of the consultation process with Native American tribes, the pipeline was rerouted 140 times. So, I mean, I think that what that is an alternative fact, actually. That is, in the process of planning the pipeline, that was the Bismarck route was one of many that was considered. But there was no protest in Bismarck. There was no, the connotation that that the pipeline was respecting, U.S. citizens and in order to disrespect Native Americans. No, it's an alternative fact. That's not true.
Christina in Grafton is with us. Hi, Christina.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for having me on. I actually have a question for your guest, and I guess I'll say that I really appreciate his use of the U.S. court documents and some objective sources, because I'm a really progressive person usually, very sympathetic to environmental causes and not a fan of fossil fuels in general, but it's been very difficult to find objective sources on this. And my question for your guest is, or both of your guests, if they want to respond, is why this pipeline? Because from my understanding and from looking at some of the maps, of oil pipelines in North Dakota, it already seems that there are pipelines running under the Missouri. So why this outcry? And I guess I kind of agree that it does look suspicious with Earth Justice being involved.
Yeah, all right. Well, do you want to briefly react to that, William?
You bet. Thank you very much for calling in, Christina. The pipeline, there actually is right through the contested easement, right through where where all the brouhaha is. There is, in fact, an existing gas pipeline. So it's not an oil pipeline. It's a different commodity. But given that the concerns are the disruption of historical preservation sites and sites that are sacred to Native Americans, it is perhaps notable that there already does exist a giant gas pipeline parallel to which the Dakota Access Pipeline would be laid across this easement, across this Ojai Reservation, or I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce it, but the contested area. So, yes, it is true that pipelines do already crisscross not just North Dakota, but much of the nation. And it is also true that at the exact area where all this dispute has come from, or where all the controversy is, there's an existing pipeline parallel to which the Dakota Access Pipeline would be built.
Let's go to Betsy in Fitchburg now. Hi, Betsy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. All sorts of thoughts are now going through my head. I realize your guest said how much millions of dollars have been spent on this project. Perhaps they shouldn't have started the project until they knew exactly where it was going. So it's not our fault if they've been spending so much money. The main reason I called is that I have a very good friend who is, you couldn't get more peaceful unless you were a Buddhist monk. He was living out there on the reservation, protesters, for 2 months and just returned. And the way they were treated was so horrible. There would be raids in the middle of the night, totally unprovoked, shooting the peaceful protesters with rubber bullets and with beanbags, and there were injuries. Do you know what a rubber bullet is? It is huge. It is scary. And the most horrifying thing to me right now is that recently several protesters were rounded up and arrested, claiming that they were trespassing. My understanding is that they were renters of the property. And you know what? Even if they weren't, this is how they were treated.
I'm going to jump in, Betsy, just because we need. So do you have a reaction to that, William, that these protesters were I guess treated unfairly?
It's a local law enforcement matter, and I saw a video where they were using water cannons, and I saw the rubber bullets, and I do not like violence. I'm a pacifist, so I did not like seeing that, but I honestly don't know.
How about her statement, though, that the company maybe shouldn't have spent all that money if the route wasn't completely locked up?
Well, they did. It was 99% on private land, and this was the permitting, federal permitting in question, as long as you go through the process, generally isn't controversial. And indeed, the Obama administration granted the initial permits, and one of which is the one that was reissued yesterday. So it's just that's not really how things work, I guess, would be my response to her.
1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Shayla in Rice Lake is with us. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My question for the guest is, I hear a lot about the jobs that are going to be created through the pipeline. But I was wondering, comparably, if we had invested in green energy instead, how many permanent jobs would have been created through green sources of energy compared to how many permanent jobs are going to be created through the pipeline?
William?
Well, I'll tell you what. So I'm a free marketer. I'm a libertarian. And there's a term known as Luddites. And that is when we, in essence, we seek job growth or believe that jobs are more paramount than wealth creation and economic prosperity. And that is to say that spending, an industry becomes less efficient the more jobs it requires to produce energy, or in particular the energy industry does. So from the economic standpoint, jobs aren't the end. Jobs are naturally attendant to wealth creation, but wealth creation is the end. If we wanted jobs, we'd go out and dig a ditch, and then we'd fill it back in. We'd do what the Soviet Union did. Everyone would have jobs, but there'd be no wealth creation. I mean, we wouldn't. You know, that's not sustainable. So that's my primary issue with the green energy industry. It would not exist were it not for political favoritism, were it not for these subsidies and mandates. And that's simply unsustainable. I mean, the fact is that political winds change. We just saw that, Jeepers Creepers, from Obama to Trump. Subsidies, it's a poor business plan to rely on subsidies as your business's lodestar. So I would respectfully disagree with the caller's emphasis on jobs. I mean, the emphasis has to be wealth creation, attended to which sustainable job growth occurs. And I guess that's my two cents.
Before we let you go, there are opponents to this pipeline who are concerned that the leak could pollute water and that it really isn't necessary. Talk some about the safety and necessity of this oil pipeline from your perspective.
Well, it's two things. It's just a matter of fact that pipelines are more environmentally safe than the alternative, which is trucking this or railing this oil by putting it on trucks or putting it on rail cars. That's less safe. I'll also note as well that transporting the oil by trucks and rail cars is more carbon intensive. You got to have that oil to burn for the gasoline and the diesel for the trains to transport it. So my response there is that is just a matter of fact. The environmentally preferable means of logistics for transporting oil is a pipeline over the alternatives that are now being used, that is trucks and rail. And indeed, I am personally not one who's concerned about global warming, but if you are, it has a smaller carbon footprint. So it's not only environmentally safer, but it's environmentally better if you were one concerned about global warming. So those are just the facts.
And there were about 200 demonstrators last night outside the White House to protest this decision that lets the Dakota Access Pipeline proceed. Opponents are vowing mass resistance and challenging this in court as well. How confident are you that this is going to happen?
Very confident, extremely confident. I mean, this is something that the Obama administration defended. It would be remarkable, and I would say highly unlikely that a court would find what the government did arbitrary and capricious. If anything, it was the Obama administration issuing a press release 5 minutes after the federal court gave the project a green light, saying in essence, "Oh, we're gonna thanks for the input, federal court. We're gonna do our own thing." It's that was arbitrary and capricious and objectionable legally. And as for the protest, God bless them. I mean, that is it's a wonderful American right. I hope no one, does anything violent. You know, as long as it's peaceful, this is America. So I'm all for it.
Thank you very much for being with us. William Yeatman is the senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, specializing in environmental policy, energy markets, and administrative law. He released a statement this week in favor of the latest developments with the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline. All right, now we will get a different perspective, and we'll continue to take your thoughts and questions. In fact, maybe I should wait until after the break. I'm Joy Kerr-Dean. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Kerr-Dean. During this hour, we are getting two takes on the controversial Dakota Access Oil Pipeline, which was granted final approval this week. The Army Corps of Engineers announced that it is granting the permit needed to complete the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline. And we wonder what you think about that, what questions you have. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We heard from a guest in our last segment who is in support of the Dakota Access Pipeline, and he said this is safe and that it's long overdue. Now we will get a different perspective from John Two Hawks, a speaker, writer, and editor for the Native Circle, which is an educational website geared to help people learn and unlearn information about Native culture and history. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for being with us. The last time we had you on the air, we talked to you about a different issue, but you were on your way to the to Standing Rock. So what is your reaction to the Army Corps granting this permit this week?
Well, it's not surprising. We kind of expected this would happen. It's very, very disappointing, obviously, because they had made a commitment to do a full environmental assessment of this project as it pertains to the crossing 1,500 feet from the current border of the Standing Rock Reservation. And they have basically just gone back on that promise. So it's very disappointing.
Yeah. So why do you oppose the project?
Well, there's a litany of reasons. I have to say that I was listening in for the first part of the talk, and I found William to be well-spoken, but I have to honestly admit that I found some of his comments to be a bit patronizing as it pertains to our people and our kind of position with this pipeline. And I think the telltale of his comments was when he said that he doesn't believe in climate change. So that right there to me is the kind of the over arcing answer that kind of explains why he has the position he has. Yeah. We, on the other hand, as indigenous people, believe that there is a serious problem with our climate and our environment, and we have to do something about it. And that is why there are protests, not only at the Dakota Access Pipeline. These protests have been going on for decades as it pertains to oil pipelines and other environmentally dangerous practices. So the Dakota Access Pipeline, the story of it, the history of it, some of the things that that William mentioned were, quite frankly, unfactual, not factual, or spin on the truth. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that there are already 2.6 million miles of oil pipeline in the United States, half of which are over 50 years old. We have a desperately aging infrastructure, fossil fuel infrastructure in this country. And pipelines break literally the averages every day. There is some failure in the United States every day of the year. And that is because that infrastructure is so old and aging. It's also because the sensor equipment that they have is failing. It doesn't work. There's not enough of them. It's also because they only have one inspector for every 18,000 miles of pipeline in this country. Yes. So there's literally no way for them to keep track of it. And so what happened with the Dakota Access Pipeline was that some of the things that that William shared were disingenuous, like the fact that the tribe, for example, it was not engaged in the process. That is just not true. Back in 2012, the Dakota Access Pipeline people with Kelsey Warren actually had a meeting with the tribe, in which the tribe turned down their offer to run the pipeline where they are trying to run it now. 2 years later, in September of 2014, they had another meeting with the tribe. And it's actually recorded. There's actually a recording of this meeting. And it was between the Standing Rock Tribal Council and ETP representatives, the Energy Transfer Partners. The tribe went on record opposed to the pipeline. And they went on record actually as early as 2012. They told the company unequivocally, face-to-face, in September of 2014, more than 2 years ago, that they opposed the pipeline's proposed crossing of the Missouri River near their reservation boundary. This is recorded. So the idea that the tribe was not engaged and didn't say anything, is just not true. Standing Rock Tribal Chairman Dave Archambault II said that we recognize our treaty boundaries from 1851 and 1868. This is recorded on record. And he said, and because of that, we oppose the pipeline. We have a standing resolution passed in 2012 that opposes the pipeline within that treaty boundary. This is something that the tribe is not supporting. He said, we will listen to your presentation and then ask our tribal historic preservation officer to help remind your company of the federal laws that include Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act. And that is how the meeting started. This is not the end of the meeting. That was the beginning. And the tribal president, Archambault, couldn't have been more clear. We oppose the pipeline is on record. So the idea that the tribe was not engaged is just disingenuous.
Let me ask you, Jen. I want you to listen to President Trump talking at a function about the Dakota Access Pipeline approval and Keystone too. But let's listen to President Trump on this issue.
As you know, I approved two pipelines that were stuck in limbo forever. I don't even think it was controversial. You know, I approved them. I haven't even heard. I haven't had one call from anybody saying, oh, that was a terrible thing you did. I haven't had one call. You know, usually if I do something, it's like bedlam, right? I haven't had one call from anybody. And, you know, we've got a lot of jobs. In the Keystone case, we have potentially 32,000 jobs almost immediately. And then, as you know, I did the Dakota pipeline. And nobody called up to complain because it was unfair. Years of getting approvals, nobody showed up to fight it. This company spends a tremendous hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, and then all of a sudden people show up to fight it. Not fair to our companies. And I think everyone's going to be happy in the end, okay?
So is everybody going to be happy in the end, John?
Obviously not. it might be surprising to some people to know that Trump's energy secretary pick, Rick Perry, he sits on the board of the Dakota Access Pipeline Company. There are so many conflicts of interest in this equation that it's borderline illegal what they're doing.
Yeah,
and it may be patently illegal.
What do you think is going to happen? I mean, I've heard that opponents have called for mass resistance. So what do you see happening?
Wow, we are at a moment now with this pipeline that is reaching critical mass, and I worry for what's to come, because now I think it's going to force the people, our water protectors, of which I proudly am proud to say I am one of them. It's going to force our water protectors who are there at the camp to have to make some very hard decisions. I know that the Lakota Law Project is taking recourse legally, but you know, the wheels of justice turn slow, and of course you have problems with you know differing opinions in the justice system on this issue. So it's no guarantee, but the actual people at the site are going to have hard decisions to make about whether or not they put themselves, their lives, their well-being at peril to try to stand in the way of this pipeline. We are not thinking about ourselves in this. We are thinking about future generations. We're thinking about the state of our environment. There's only enough oil in the ground to produce crude for, you know, about the next 23 years. And that's actually a statement by the Environmental Information Association. They say there's only enough crude oil at our current rate and with estimates of growth to last about the next 23 years. And so my question is, when is it enough? When do we stop? I mean, do we have to take every last drop of oil out of the earth before we say, okay, that's enough? The problem, unfortunately, with William's position is that, quite frankly, he doesn't believe there's climate change. So if you don't believe there's climate change, well, then drill, baby, drill, you know? Take every drop of it, because climate change isn't real. But if anyone has any sense that there is a problem with our climate, that we are getting warmer, which scientifically has been really pretty unanimously proven, then, yeah, we've got to make a decision here. And I think our indigenous people are standing in, at the Dakota Access Pipeline, not just for the Dakota Access Pipeline stoppage. They're standing there to represent all environmental battles all around the world, to kind of help us collectively wake up and say, okay, we need to get serious about renewable energy sources. We need to get serious about, you know, building electric cars and wind turbines and solar panels and so on and so forth. We can't just, you know, the problem with this situation with the Dakota Access Pipeline, this company, by the way, is the literally the bottom of the food chain. They are the worst. They have been fined in the last 5 years over $22 million for environmental disasters, for environmental, you know, they've just made
oil
incredible
spills.
Oil spills and environmental hazards. They've been fined over $22 million by the United States government. For oil spills.
I'll give you
some statistics if you want to on that, too.
Well, we also have lots of callers who have various things. But I wanted to ask you, when President Trump in that clip said, I haven't received a single call, no one is objecting to this. Do you think they're just not getting through?
Yeah. Either that or he's just spinning it. I can't explain how or why Mr. Trump comes to the sense of things that he does and why he says the things he does. I don't know. Maybe he's just lying.
Let's go to David in Oshkosh. He's got a question. I'm sorry, John. Here's David in Oshkosh. Go ahead, David.
Sure. Hi, Joy. Thank you very much for taking my call. First, I just wanted to say that your first guest had pretty much covered almost everything that I had thought of while we were going through this conversation here. But really the main reason that I wanted to call today was because when we look at the safety of a pipeline versus transporting crude oil and by any other mode of transportation, when you factor in how many barrels are transported by pipeline via rail or any other way, the percentage of the spill and the frequency that it happened and the fatalities that it's caused, it is by and large the safest mode of transportation. And there's been many studies that have pointed that out.
All right. Well, the other guest made that point. What about that point, John, that the pipelines are safer than other ways to transport oil? And for that matter, using those other ways contributes more to climate change if that's a concern.
Okay. First of all, thanks for bringing up that point. And I'm going to try to respectfully offer another perspective. You can make the argument that based on volume, and based on, you know, the number of spills and accidents there are with oil, whether it's train, tractor trailer, tanker, or oil pipeline, you can make the argument that that the oil pipeline is quote unquote safer. Okay, but here's the problem: we're not thinking about the environment. The problem is when an oil tanker tips over, there is definitely a risk for loss of life and limb, and that's bad. It's not good. There's no good on either side of this. But when they do tip over, the amount of oil that is lost or that's put into the earth is only what's in that tank, and that's it, and it's localized. What happens when an oil pipeline breaks is it usually breaks under the ground, and it usually runs until somebody notices it. I'm going to give you an example. The Kalamazoo River oil spill occurred in July of 2010. Now, this company is Enbridge. This is the same company that's involved with the Dakota Access Pipeline. It's the largest oil spill by pipeline in U.S. history. It occurred in 2010 on a pipeline operated by Enbridge, burst and flowed into the Talmadge Creek. It's a tributary of the Kalamazoo River. A 6-foot break in the pipeline resulted in the largest inland oil spill, 20,000 barrels in 20 hours. That's the equivalent of 1 million gallons of oil, and one of the costliest spills in U.S. history. The cleanup cost $767 million. And Enbridge was fined over $177 million for it. That's just one example. Now, that is my argument to the idea that pipelines are safer. Now, here's the other part of that equation. We already have 2.6 million miles of pipe under the ground. We don't need any more. We don't need any more. We already have enough. We have enough in transportation of oil via pipelines that exist and via our current systems of rail and tractor, trailer, and tanker to supply the demand that we have for oil. The only reason the Dakota Access Pipeline wants this pipe is not because of a need. There's no economic need. This has been proven. There's no demand need. They want this pipeline. They don't need it. They want it because it's going to make them more money.
Let me bring in one more caller, Nate in Milwaukee. Hi, Nate.
Hi. Thank you, your guest, for talking about global warming. I want to add to that when global warming causes a drought, causes fires, causes a flood, the oil company does not pay to send in rescue workers, does not pay to fix the damage. Right. If you add all that up, that is one large subsidy, and it's going to continue to grow the longer the global warming gets worse.
Yeah. John?
Yeah, that's a very good point. And it's also, to add to that comment, you may find it interesting to know that a lot of these pipeline companies, including Enbridge, including the Dakota Access Pipeline Company, get paid to clean up their own messes. So they're actually making money on the spill. So what is the incentive? Where is the incentive for them to do the right thing? When oil pipeline companies, when oil pipelines started back in 1879, the idea wasn't we're going to create this safe way to transport oil. The idea was we're going to create a way to send oil faster so we can make more money. And that sort of business model has never changed. It hasn't changed up to this day. They're not really that concerned about the environment. They're not that concerned about making sure that the oil pipeline doesn't leak or burst. They really aren't, because they get paid to clean it up half the time. And so they're not, you know, they don't have a really onus to kind of build a safer infrastructure.
Let me, in our final minute, and I'm sorry, John, such a short time, are you optimistic that the Dakota Access Pipeline, this final segment, can be stopped?
Here's what I hope. I hope that I'll be honest with you, I'm not that optimistic. And the reason I'm not that optimistic is because of the history of it. And because there's so much corruption, there's so much backroom backflapping, and so much collusion between, you know, like I indicated earlier, you know, Governor Perry's on the board of Apple. You know, Mr. Trump had, or maybe even still has, investments in Apple. But there's so many problems with it that, you know, big money has had a tendency in the history of our history here with Native people and really with people in general to just roll over people when they want something.
And we're going to have to leave it there, and we'll keep following the situation. Thanks to John Two Hawks for being with us. Thanks to Nyasia Ellison for producing the program. This is the Ideas Network.